But I do have an opening story for you that is related to the topic for a change. And it's all about this guy who found himself stranded in the middle of the desert. And he was crawling around for over a day, and he's just dying of thirst. On his hands and knees, he's crawling, and his face is getting redder and redder. He starts to resemble a beet. And all of a sudden, he comes upon, in the middle of a desert, this stand with a guy there that is selling neckties. And he shakes his head, and he says, "This has to be a mirage." But he approaches the guy, and he's saying, "Water, water, do you have any water?" And the guy says, "What? No, I don't have any water. I have neckties." And the guy says, "No, no, I need water, water." And so the tie salesman says, "Well, I know that there's a restaurant about a half a mile in that direction." So the guy goes crawling off to the restaurant, and he comes back about 3.5 hours later, still on his hands and knees, and now his face resembles a match head that has just been lit. He's just on fire, and he's just desperate. And this Thai salesman says, "Didn't you find a restaurant?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Didn't you get any water?" And he said, "No, they won't let me in without a Thai." I had another joke that I liked better, but my wife wouldn't let me tell it. Later downstairs, maybe I'll share that with you. This is the beginning of Advent. This is also a Power Sunday, a day that we celebrate and talk about the last of the 12 powers as outlined by our co-founder, Charles Fillmore. And today, the power that we talk about is life. And this is also the day of our celebration of remembrance. And so I'm going to try a little bit to tie those two things together, because the fact of the matter is that they are absolutely hand-in-hand related to one another. And in doing so, I also have to talk about water. That's why I chose that joke to share with you this morning. And water over the centuries has really, in terms of church speak and church talk, I think been given a bit of a bad rap. Because almost every traditional religion, water is viewed upon as a purification agent, a cleansing agent. And it makes sense for us in our own society, right? I mean, we shower, we bathe, we wash clothes, we do the dishes, you know, we scrub the floors, and on all of these, we need to have water. But there's a way more powerful significance to water. And I think if you had to choose any one symbol that represented life, it would be water. We cannot live without water. Wherever there is water, there is life. Where there is no water, there's no life. And it's no wonder when we send exploring spacecraft out to Mars or whatever, we're checking to see if there is water so that we can consider the possibility of life on other planets. Water is truly the lifeblood of who and what we are. Our body compositions are 60% water. And so fascinating that our hearts and our brains are 73% water. And our lungs are 82% water. And even our very bones, when they're healthy, are 30% water. It's just absolutely fascinating. That's who and what we are. All life on Earth, at one time or another, sprung from the sea. And pregnancies for all mammals during the gestation period, you know, we are immersed in water. We spring forth from water, and water basically is who and what we are. And if you've ever had the experience in your life of being even partially dehydrated for any reason, and you just know that horrible feeling that you have, you are really, really, really sick when you're dehydrated. And so there's a gospel story that I think relates to this in a very significant way. And this is the gospel story about the wedding feast at Cana. And it's found in the Gospel of John. And just to share, going back in those days at the time of Jesus, in the whole Jewish culture, the wedding feast was the biggest possible event that people ever participated in. And it, you know, if you got invited to the wedding feast, it was wonderful. And if you did not get invited and you lived in the town, it was absolutely horrible experience for you. So Mary and Jesus are invited and they go and attend the wedding feast. And they're there for a while. And all of a sudden, there's a crisis. For whatever reason, they have run out of wine. So the feast master gathers his stewards together and he says, we got to do something here. We're out of wine. This is embarrassing. Somebody has to take a run to Binny's. And they tell him, Master, we can't do that. Binny's hasn't been invented yet. And he said, that's right. I don't know what to do. Mary catches wind of the whole thing. And she goes to her son Jesus and she said, they have run out of wine. And Jesus gives her a couple of responses, including, and this is a problem for me, why? You know, or why is this my problem? And he says, woman, my time has not yet come. She ignores what her son says, and she goes to the stewards, and she just tells them, go to Jesus and do whatever he tells you to do. So they do that, and there are six large water containers. And he instructs them to fill them to the brim with water, and they listen to him. And then he says, draw a sample from one of them and take them to the headmaster. And they do that, and he tastes it, and he goes running to the bridegroom, and he says, this is incredible. Typically, what happens at a party like this is they serve the good wine first. And then when everybody's a little tipsy and could care less what a drink tastes like, you bring out the bad wine to save money. But you have saved the best for last. Nobody knew what Jesus did except for the wine stewards. They knew. This really is one of my favorite stories to be found in the Gospels, because when I first started taking a good look at this and I was in ministerial school, kind of a bell went off in my head, because the metaphysics in the story are absolutely incredible. Last week we talked about the great banquet and how everybody is invited to the feast. And so this is a little bit of a continuation on that. But the problem is, when we run out of water, we really run out of wine, because wine is used to make water. And if water is the ultimate symbol of life, and if our own bodies are constituted with 60% water, then I have a simple charge for you today. I really think if you ever want to ask that philosophical question, why am I here? You're here to take water and convert it into wine. You're here to take your very elementary, basic self. You know that part of you that has taken a lot of guff over the years, that part of you that has been criticized and at sometimes humiliated or disgraced or made to feel small for some reason? You are water. And you have the inherent power to change it into the sweet, smooth, delicious taste of wine. And so I look out at you today, and it's not difficult for me to envision that we are all of different years and different vintages. I see some Chardonnays and some Merlots and some Malbecs, you know, a couple of Pinots, because we are all different. but we all have this gift of water that we are. We are living expressions of God. Unity defines the power of life as that vibrant movement, wholeness, creativity that each and every one of us has as part of our very, very basic makeup. Life is the manifestation of the eternal, pure existence of God, and it's within each and every one of us. So let's go back to that story a bit, because something that we could all relate to. This is a problem for me. Why? Why are you bringing this to me? But even the more significant, more powerful line in the whole thing is, my time has not yet come. And Mary, representing the intuitive part of each and every one of us, says, your time has come because you are getting the message now that your time has come, because there's an opportunity in front of you to turn water into wine. All of us have had that feeling of, why me? No. Will you come up and read something? No, take somebody else. You know, will you do this? No, I'm not quite ready. Give me a couple months to get my feet wet, then maybe. I'm sharing with you that whatever you might think of my talks on Sunday, the single best talk that maybe I ever gave was when I was at Unity Northwest and I was an aspiring minister and a licensed Unity teacher. And Joanne Ballard, who was the spiritual leader at the church at the time, took ill between the two services. And somebody said to me, Mike, you want to be a minister? Get up and lead the service and give the talk. And I said, my time has not yet come. I am not ready for this. And I was criticized by a good friend of mine and said, wait a minute, you want to be a minister and you're going to really play this card that you're not ready? And so I took a breath and I gave a talk. And I was just left to speak about what was coming from my heart and hope that it was okay. That's what turning water into wine is all about. You're not being asked to produce a $3,000 bottle of wine. You're just being asked to use whatever water you have to do the best you can to produce the most tasteful vintage that you ever can. In a similar story, Reverend Greg Barrett, who was one of the finest speakers that I ever heard in Unity, talks about the time that he always stood at the podium and read his talks on Sunday. And then one day his talk was in the office, and the office was locked, and he didn't have a key, and they called the custodian of the church and said, could you please come and open the door so I could get my talk? And Greg Barrett said he wouldn't come because he didn't like me. True story. He said, no, I'm not coming out for you. So Greg found himself, for the first time in his life, that he ever winged it through a talk. And then he actually ventured away from the podium and said he felt a push to move forward into the congregation. We all feel these pushes. Maybe they come with a phone call from somebody out of the blue that you weren't expecting and you didn't want to deal with. Somebody's not doing well. Somebody's sick or whatever. But there's a push. A couple weeks ago, I walked out of Jewel and the woman was locked out of her car and I was in a hurry and I didn't want to deal with her and she was sobbing like crazy. And I felt a push. And I had no choice but to try to attend to her in some way, shape, or form. If you're not ready now, when are you going to be ready? You know, this gift of life that we have is so incredibly precious. This gift of life that we all share. We keep making references to the Christ within, and maybe we don't even know what we're talking about. When you get up in the morning and go to the bathroom and you are creating movement, doing something as basic and fundamental that we all take for granted, you're exercising your power of life. And in some small way, you're turning water into wine. The last part of the story is also very, very profound. And nobody knew about it. But the stewards knew. When you turn water into wine, it isn't so the whole world will take notice of it. It's not so the whole world will make notes about it and sing your praises. And oh my God, what an incredible miracle worker you are. Your miracles that you are called to do, if you do wonderful, grandiose things, that's terrific, and the whole world will applaud. But you have opportunities to do this, to turn water into wine every day of your life, in every person that you meet, and it may not take anything more than giving that human being a smile. It may not take anything more than opening up your heart and opening up your ears and listening to somebody. Recognition isn't what it's all about. It's all about taking this gift that you have and enriching it in every thought, in every action, and never losing sight that this is what you are called to do. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember 1960. And way back then, there was a launching of a commercial for Italian-Swiss Colony wine. And if you were around at that time, there was a very popular jingle. Who picked the grapes that went into the wine? And, who made the wine nice and smooth and sweet and tasty? And then a little voice would come out, that little old winemaker, me. Each and every one of you is that little old winemaker. Okay, maybe some of you are the little young winemaker, and that's cool too. Because we learn how to survive, and when we get scared, our reptilian brains take over, and it's all about preserving life, which really is such a gift. When I was working as an intern during my ministerial training at Research Hospital, I was so blown away by something that was so obvious to me my whole life, the incredible dedication and labor and work that goes into preserving a single life. EMTs would bring people in on stretchers, people that a lot of the world maybe would regard as lowlifes, people who were struggling with drug addictions, people who were gang members. And none of that mattered. Because those emergency people were there dealing with all kinds of body fluids, blood and urine and whatever, and none of that mattered. Because the sanctity of life is so important. No expense was spared in trying to keep somebody alive and maintain the incredible gift of life. Even if it was a situation in which it was obvious that the person was only going to survive maybe another day. I mean, you're sitting here, you're breathing. We're going to go down after the service and we're going to share coffee and we're going to have hospitality and we're going to be eating and you're walking and you're talking. And all of these things are just so easy to take for granted. Every single motion, every bit of activity, every thought that you entertain, right or wrong, you are manifesting the Christ within. You are making present in the world the reality of God just by sharing who you are. And so, yeah, you really do have a choice. Because you could make Ripple or Thunderbird, and only the older people in the crowd will relate to those. Those were really horrible wines back in the 60s. Or Two Buck Chuck. Or you could make the finest wine that ever was on the face of the earth just by being who you are. And we're soon going to be going into our service of remembrance today. You know, it's a time where we're going to take some meditative moments and we're going to take it to prayer and we're going to think about those people that have passed, people who have been significant in our lives. And these people are significant to us precisely because through our relationship with them, somehow they were special in the way that they took water, who they were, and made it into wine. It is rightful for us to do this. But it's also important to us as we engage in this service today and we truly remember those expressions of the Christ, those expressions of God in our lives, that they're not gone. They have passed on to us a better knowing, a better learning about just what we have to do to better love one another, to better be there for one another, so that we could truly follow in their footsteps in a meaningful, more powerful way. We're not bringing anybody back to life today. We're doing something even greater, even more profound than that. By participating in the service, we are in effect saying, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm ready. My time is now. It's time for me to take the gift of life and celebrate it by being the very, very, very best Christ that I could be. And so with this, I'm going to move this tree back with hopefully without toppling it. And we're going to go into prayer and meditation and lead into our service this morning. Everybody was given an electronic tea light, and I hope you're not offended by the technology. But I just thought, frankly, it was a lot easier logistically and safely in a lot of other ways. So I'll beckon to you to come forward at the right time, and as you are comfortable, I invite you to do that. Place your tag on our little tree. Hold in your hearts and minds whatever prayer that you wish to do. And then take your tea candle on your way up. Just turn it on by flipping the switch. And you may leave it on one of these two tables so that when we're finished, we'll have a certain glow.